Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about the House of Horrors 2 in Texas, and I have a guest in studio to help us comprehend that unbelievably wicked occurrence, the Kermit Gosnell number 2 now in Texas. But before that, out of Everson, Washington, Glenn Beck today was talking about another terrible crime, the rape of a 12-year-old girl. She was impregnated. Apparently, it's her mother's friend, impregnated her. His name is Luis Gonzalez Jose, and he raped her. Then he brought her to Planned Parenthood, and we've been talking about this for years. Planned Parenthood is the ally of the rapist. They're the accomplice after the fact. They don't even report suspected child sex abuse, and so they aborted the baby, and now this case, thankfully, the girl spoke up, explained that she was raped by a 31-year-old man, and now that man has pleaded guilty to second-degree rape of a child. But here is what Glenn Beck said today. He said, you know, this guy is apparently an illegal alien. Now, we don't know that, but he might be. He said, if it wasn't for illegal aliens, this wouldn't have happened. And I thought, Glenn, you and your church advocate killing babies in the womb if the father is a rapist. If your Mormon church would defend the right to life of every innocent child and not actually advocate the killing of some kids, this wouldn't happen. And what's worse, for liberal politicians to allow undocumented workers into the country, or for someone who claims to be a follower of Christ, he's not, but he claims to be, to defend killing some kids? That's worse. So check out prolifeprofiles.com/the Mormon Church. Just go to Pro-Life Profiles, click on Tier 4, Personhood Never, and read the profile for the Mormon Church. You will be shocked to see there are 5 instances in which they say that they support a woman's right to kill the baby. Shocking. And so now we go from horror to horror. We go to Texas. And to introduce this story is the president of American Right to Life, Leslie Hanks. Leslie, welcome back to Bob and Your Life.
Oh, thanks, Bob. It's a pleasure to be here. Pleasure. It's so hard to even talk about these stories. They're so horrendous. But
yes,
after the Gosnell trial, finding him guilty of 3 murders, I believe, last week, now there's Operation Rescue in Texas, along with Life Dynamics, has uncovered an abortionist down there, Douglas Carpin, doing very similar horrifying acts of killing babies after they're born. They induce delivery early. The babies are born alive. And then we're going to hear from 3 women who work for this gentleman.
He's not a gentleman, right? He's a murderer.
That's true.
He's an abortionist.
Murderer.
But these are 3 clinic workers.
Correct. And this is at the Aaron Women's Clinic in Houston. And they do talk. Footage that we're about to hear about, they were becoming increasingly uncomfortable with the fact that he was charging $4,000 to $5,000 to, you know, do the horrendous things that he does to kill these little babies.
These babies. And they were afraid because they see the Gosnell trial. And these clinic workers are pleading guilty to homicide charges.
That's right.
And they realize the way their abortionist is killing these babies is even more horrific than Gosnell.
It is. And they talked about how greedy he was. So, you know, the whole industry is, you know.
Yeah, blood money.
Blood money, and we're killing the innocent. A special verse that really applies here, Deuteronomy 27:25, that there's a special curse on those who take money to kill the innocent.
Wow. Wow. Thank you for that, Leslie. And the pro-life movement has been warning the country for years that when you kill babies in the womb, the same people will advocate killing them out of the womb. It's now epidemic. So we're going to hear from these 3 clinic workers. Now, Gosnell was, I think, convicted on the 13th, May 13th, of 3 counts of murder in the first degree. These interviews were conducted, I believe, on May 14th. At least that's when our dear friend, Mark Crutcher of Life Dynamics in Texas, Denton, Texas, he then published this video. We're going to hear the audio, and the audio is shocking. When this was published, They did not mention the name of the abortionist or the abortion mill. Now we have that information.
Correct.
But this is way more far spread than the media wants everybody to think. A Kermit Gosnell is a freak occurrence.
An aberration, right.
Right. And this has been going on for decades, as we'll hear yet again, now this time in Houston, Texas.
That's right.
Right. Let's hear it.
On May 13th, 2013, Kermit Gosnell, a Pennsylvania abortion doctor, was convicted for murder in the deaths of several children. In that trial, witnesses testified that these babies survived abortions Gosnell was performing, after which he killed them outside the womb. Although the media, in concert with the American abortion lobby, is portraying this as an isolated situation, the pro-life movement has been aware of similar stories for years, and today, additional examples are beginning to emerge. On May 3, 2013, the following interviews were conducted with three recent employees of an abortion clinic located in a different state. Their real names are used in this production, but the identity of the doctor and his facility are being withheld to keep from compromising a criminal investigation into this matter. At the time this video was released, the abortion clinic in question remained open. Warning: this video contains material that is graphic and disturbing, and it is not suited for all audiences. Discretion is strongly advised.
I was an OR assistant. I was basically, I did a lot of parts of the clinic, and one of my jobs was his right chair assistant. And I really didn't, I never paid attention. I did pay attention, but I didn't know that it was illegal. When he did an abortion, especially a over 20-week abortion, most of the time the fetus would come completely out before he either cut the spinal cord or he introduced one of the instruments into the soft spot of the fetus in order to kill the fetus. But I wasn't aware. You know, I thought, well, it's an abortion. You know, that's what he does. But I wasn't aware that it was illegal. And on many occasions, we had fetus that he would use the process as far as what is it called, where he would dilate the cervix and then evacuate the uterus. And most of the time we would see him where the fetus would come completely out, and of course the fetus would still be alive because it was still moving, and you could see the stomach breathing. And that's when he would do his, he would snip the spine, as they're saying, that this doctor did. And of course the soft spot was one of the spots that he would take the one of the forceps or the, what is it called, the dilators, and stick it down the soft spot of the fetus's head.
Saw this happen?
Oh yes. I think every morning I saw several occasions. If we had 20-something patients, of course, maybe 10 or 12 or 13 or 15 patients would be large procedures. And out of those large procedures, I'm pretty sure I was seeing at least 3 to 4 fetus that were completely delivered in some way or another. Because sometimes laminaria causes the cervix to get so soft that you don't need a lot of pulling or anything on it. Once you take that package out, 9 times out of 10, that fetus is ready kind of just to flow from inside of the uterus out into,
you know. When you say package, you mean the laminaria?
The laminaria package insertion, yes,
right.
Sir.
You take that out and the baby's ready to come out?
Yes, sir. As soon as that, or sometimes he would go ahead and bust the water sac, and there you go. You know, you practically had a fetus, you know, in the pan. So.
And you see the baby alive?
Yes, sir.
And him to kill that baby outside the womb?
Yes, sir.
And this would be done by jamming some sort of instrument into the
either that or
soft spot
or twisting the head off the neck kind of with his own bare hands.
And you saw that happen?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. So he
sometimes
would twist the head off.
Sometimes he would go through the stomach as well.
Sometimes he would do what?
He would like force it through the stomach.
The instrument,
mm-hmm.
the is it beards?
And like twist it.
Yeah.
And another you saw that?
Mm-hmm. Anything that he can get to the fastest. Like she said, the umbilical, he was probably perforating the umbilical cord. I normally saw either the snipping of the spine or the introduction of the instrument in the soft spot of the fetus, normally. Or twisting of the neck.
I remember he would put like his finger.
Yeah, or his finger. He'd take his finger and then
through the throat.
Yeah. You remember that the one that he did at the baby? The fetus came out and it was alive. He had thought he had actually killed it already, and he opened up his eyes and grabbed his hand, his finger. Mm-hmm. Remember that one?
No. What happened?
Supposedly they said that it was a botch. And it was a botch abortion. The fetus was still alive. He thought it was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And the fetus opened his eyes and actually
grabbed his finger.
Was able to grab his finger. And the whole procedure, I guess, while he's doing the procedure.
He was getting
Because after the fetus, of course, he has to massage the abdomen to bring the placenta down or grab it with the forceps to bring it out.
And this baby
was alive.
Now, huh?
He was alive.
Well, yeah, he's looking at him, grabbing his finger.
Yeah.
Yeah. He thought he had finished with the baby.
He thought it was deceased already.
It was a disease already. He was getting ready to put it in the back.
Did he talk about that?
One of his employees did. That's how I found out.
He doesn't talk about that. He doesn't make any comments about it.
How did he kill that baby, do you know?
We found out about it through another employee. I don't think that was said how he killed it. I'm not sure. It must have been a big abortion, though, I believe. Can't really recall, but I know that he does a lot of huge abortions. A lot of the times we would bring the big fetus that were overage, and we would reopen the bag and just look at it and be like, oh my God, it's so big. You know, we would be amazed how big it was, and we'd be sweating and stuff because it'd take us almost an hour to perform an abortion that big. It's really hard when you only get doing an abortion that big and only dilating with like maybe 13 to 14 laminaries in the cervix. It's kind of hard. Sometimes he couldn't get the fetus out. He would yank piece by piece,
yeah,
when they were over the size. And I'm talking about the whole floor dirty. I'm talking about me drenched in blood. We had several occasions that where women would come in and they would actually be going in labor because that overnight insertion, the package, he might have gone a little bit too far. We put in too many in there, and some women had started to cramp, and mm-hmm. sometimes they would get to the clinic and they wouldn't make it to the OR room because they're in a line. And, you know, when they get there, they give them these pills called Cytotec, and they put them in your gums. And it takes, I'm thinking it takes about an hour before you get a full effect, and that makes your uterus start contracting. And so we've seen a lot of cases where women would have to, they felt like they had to push and they had to run to the bathroom and stuff. And on some occasions, we had women that were, the fetus were falling into the toilet, or they were, or before even getting to the clinic, we had one incident where it was big news, where the fetus was left in the toilet. I don't know if y'all heard of that one. She was at McDonald's. They stopped there in the morning and the fetus was left in the toilet, and nobody ever found out whose fetus it was, but it was one of his patients. We knew it because we were watching it on the news that day that she was supposed to be in the clinic.
Do you remember that one that she was on her way to the OR, Crystal? And she was walking to her OR and she had it right there in the hallway.
She had her baby in the hallway?
Yes.
And what happened to that baby?
I wasn't down there when that happened. Were you down there?
He just picked it up with like a pad, one of those...
Chucks.
A chuck.
Uh-huh.
And put in a trash bag.
On some occasions, of course, he pulled out a lot of breech fetus, and their toes would be moving. You know, you can see the fetus toes moving. And as he would insert the forceps, what are they called? The beards. There's two types. Mm-hmm. There's the beards, and then there's the sofers. The beards are the ones with the bigger claws, and that's the one he would use to yank the fetus out. And I remember, I have a visual all the time, I always remember this, it's real disturbing to me, where he used to clamp, like push it in. He would hold the fetus by the feet and kind of pull down and insert the claws. And when he would squeeze them, you can see that baby's toes spread open. And I would always say, oh my goodness, you know, and people say that that they don't feel. Well, if they didn't feel, why would their toes, their toes would be out hanging, kind of like in a, what's going on, you know? You know, where am I going? And I remember I remember clearly every time he used that instrument. I remember those little toes, you know, opening wide. It was a sad picture. I normally would turn around, kind of just hold and, you know, just turn around until he was finished. And he would do abortions way over 24 weeks. I mean, there's a big difference in a 24-week fetus. And every week from 24 on up, that 1 week is such a big difference. I'm talking about big fetus. I'm talking about being in the OR about an hour trying to do one procedure that big. I'm talking about being really tired after this procedure from where he could not get this fetus out. You know, and it's very overwhelming. We used to look at each other, and sometimes our tears would come out, you know, with the other assistants. Our tears would come out because we would say to ourselves, why? We would always think he's so greedy, you know. And we were not talking about normal price. I'm talking about $4,000, $5,000 for a procedure this big.
As long as the patients had the cash, he was going to do it past the 25 weeks.
Yeah.
Did you ever assist like?
Yes, I did.
You did? Mm-hmm. What kind of experiences did you have?
The same thing she did is the same thing I did. I would tell Deborah all the time, Deborah, I don't want to go in there. I don't want to go in there. And he would tell me, like, yeah, you can do it. You can do it. If you feel like you just can't look at it, just turn your face.
He wanted me in the phone room because I've always been pretty good at appointments and, you know, talking to people and convincing them to come to the clinic. I just knew my way, you know, as far as talking to patients, being real good convincing patients to make appointments. And so that's when he threw her in the back office, which was OR, sterilization, you know, things like that. I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, from these large abortions, these botched abortions that he was doing, to hurting the patients on the table, to causing some kind of major problem with the woman's, you know, ripping a uterus and not letting the patients know, trying to stitch them back together and send them home with the package of gauze, and then they come back tomorrow so he could pull it out, but never telling the woman, you know, hey, I ripped your cervix. You need to get some kind of, you know, some kind of special, you know, you need to get that looked at, you know. He would never tell the woman.
And if he had a patient that asked a lot of questions, he'll prefer for them to be put to sleep.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Right. Any little comment that you would make as far as if you were on the table, it was his way of making more money, of course, because deep sedation meant dishing out another $200. So if you made, is it going to hurt? I mean, this man would walk out the room and say, Deborah, go talk to her. Tell her she needs to get put to sleep. And normally it was our job to go convince the girl that she had to get put to sleep. And a lot of them raised a lot of hell.
Right.
But they didn't have no choice. They had to do what he said because guess what? You're going to lose $150. In other words, that was $150 that you did not get back. So a lot of them would either lose the $150 or pay the $200 and go ahead and get it over with.
So other employees besides just Deborah and Crystal knew that these sort of things were going on?
Yeah. Everybody there.
Everybody knows. It's an open book.
Yeah. The women that go there have no idea what they're getting themselves into. A lot of the questions have been, does the baby feel? And I think that would make me so mad because I would say, why would that matter to you if you're coming in here to kill your baby? You know, why ask that question? And of course, you would want to say, yeah, it feels, but that wasn't your job to say that. Your job was to whatever it took to get that person in the back, you know.
Well, Leslie Hanks, thank you for being here with me as we air this for the audience. It's horrifying to hear. It was painful to listen to this in preparation for today's show. It was painful to hear it again.
Yes, and you know, people can actually view this. It's a YouTube, so if they want to, you know, actually see the women testifying, they might.
So on today's show, kgov.com will embed the video right into the show summary.
Right. So beyond the horror of it all is the horrifying conclusion that our friends at Operation Rescue had actually filed the original complaint, I think based on one of the women inside the clinic that we heard today, called them after receiving a whistleblower postcard. They kind of snuck the card out, and they started working with Operation Rescue, and so a formal complaint was filed to the Texas Medical Board. And shockingly enough, Cheryl Sellinger, who has done a lot of work for years exposing these kinds of fraudulent practices, and the list goes on. Late-term abortions done at 28 weeks and later, reuse of disposable instruments, surgical equipment not properly sterilized.
These are complaints from the clinic worker who Cheryl Sellinger then was able to talk with.
Right.
Because she responded to this
pamphlet.
Mm-hmm. And then this was brought to the Texas Medical Board. The medical board dismissed the complaint.
It's unbelievable,
saying
but they did.
They simply didn't have enough information.
Right.
Well, wouldn't it have been helpful for them to actually talk to one of the clinic workers? Wouldn't that have been helpful to find out that this guy is not only killing babies in the womb, which they don't care about, they celebrate that, but he's even killing them after they're born in these horrific ways that we just heard described. And so the Texas Medical Board, this is routine. It's been routine. That's why the Gosnell case is significant. It's helped to break through.
Absolutely.
It's helped to break through so people could realize that every abortionist is Gosnell.
Mm-hmm.
Gosnell
is the face of the industry.
Right. And the House of Horrors is Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood is the House of Horrors.
Yeah.
So the Texas Medical Board, no surprise to anyone, you know, I got friends in Texas. They think if Texas seceded, it would be a righteous nation by itself. It's like Texas is a basket case. Like Texas is one of the states that started this whole horror.
Well, that's right. That's
with our friend Norma McCorvey, who was Jane Roe.
Right.
Who now has repented and asked Jesus Christ to forgive her, and she's a pro-life activist. They had an exception in Texas for rape.
That's right.
And in the Roe v. Wade decision, the Texas prosecutor was asked, well, you guys don't believe the baby in the womb is a person. If you did, you wouldn't say you could kill the baby if the father is a rapist.
Right. Sarah Weddington.
Yeah. Sarah Weddington was the attorney for the abortion industry.
Right.
For Jane Roe, Norma McCorvey.
Used her for years. And
yeah. And what was the Attorney General of Texas, Flowers? I think his name was Flowers or something. I forget his name right now. But he had no answer. And the Supreme Court justice asked him, you say it's a person. How could it be a person? You guys agree to kill. So Texas had an exception for rape. And so that, again, was what started the whole Holocaust, the exceptions. As soon as a good person says you could kill one innocent baby, then you've come to this.
That's right. Right out of the Nuremberg trial movie that you have footage on the KGOV website.
In our Focus on the Strategy documentary. Exactly. I never knew it would come to this. The Nazi judge said to the American judge, Spencer Tracy.
Mm-hmm.
And Spencer Tracy says, the minute you sentenced to death a man you knew to be innocent, that's when it came to this. And that's
so
true
powerful.
Of every one of these so-called pro-lifers who advocate killing some kids. This is on their neck, this whole abortion holocaust. So, Leslie, the Texas Medical Board dismissed the complaint, but now it's, in fact, the lieutenant governor there is demanding an investigation, and I believe an investigation has begun
in Harris County is what I just recently read. But we talked a little bit, you and I, on the break that, interestingly enough, Eric Holder, you know, the attorney general, was asked the other day, are you prosecuting any of these abortionists on the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, which our friend Jill Stanek was instrumental in getting passed. And he didn't have an answer. He didn't know. But we do know that he's been very vociferous about prosecuting rescuers that go to Planned Parenthood to try to save babies.
Like our friend Joe Scott.
Yeah, and Ken.
And Ken Scott, who's walking down the street. By the way, Ken Scott's latest case is now on the docket at the U.S. Supreme Court for May 30th. His is the first with Cliff Powell. Theirs is the first case to be heard that morning. It's not being argued the whole case. The court is deciding whether or not to accept the case.
It's so exciting.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Joe Scott in the Wild Goose case, that's proceeding. And the latest on that is this director of security for Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains tweeted to Tony Massey, you know, Ken and Joe and Tony, they're a team,
right.
Tweeted a photo of his gun and said something like, my gun is cleaned and, you know, ready for work next week. And he sent that to the protesters.
Your Twilight Zone alert for the day.
That's just, and
that's
chilling. He's unbalanced.
It sounds like
he's not all there. And his wife is convicted. The one who accused Joe Scott is convicted of a felony.
That's right.
And he makes plenty of money, and she's got three public defenders working for her for years for free. For free. She's stealing from the taxpayers. Forget about the felony theft, the $42,000 she stole that she convicted of.
From the World Arena, right?
What's that?
The World Arena in Colorado Springs.
Oh, is that where she...
I read that, yeah.
What did she embezzle the money? She stole the money?
Well, that sounds about right.
What a pair. Okay, yeah. So...
TexasGosnell.com, if people want to learn more about this horrifying person, Douglas Carpen, that's working in Texas to kill babies after they're born.
TexasGosnell.com.
Yeah. And then, Bob, do you think we'll ever be able to bring back the notion of crimes against humanity? That's just been on my heart a lot lately.
Well,
and
wow.
You pulled it up on Wikipedia, the definition. I don't see why these babies' deaths wouldn't be considered a crime against humanity.
Yeah, a particularly odious offense that constitutes a serious attack on human dignity or grave humiliation, degradation of human beings in a systematic way. Especially where the government is involved or looks the other way. And so this is what's going on. The government, just like the Texas Medical Board, dismisses a complaint that is so serious. We've seen this in Colorado. We've got our own late-term butcher up in Boulder, Colorado, Warren Hearn. He's been killing kids. Charges as much as, wow, I've seen some of the bills from insurance providers who send us the bills as pro-lifers, say we had to pay this $14,000 to kill one late-term baby.
Right.
That's Warren Hearn.
Yeah.
So it's in Colorado. We have a professor at CU in Boulder, Michael Tooley, who advocates infanticide, not only abortion, but infanticide, which is a post-birth abortion. That's what infanticide is.
Right, right. And then we've got our very own Attorney General Southers, who refused to do anything his office.
John Southers.
We brought the information about Planned Parenthood covering up statutory rape.
Right, exactly. And he won't even send out a letter to county sheriffs to say this is something we need to be concerned about. That's what we asked this alleged conservative, alleged whatever, John Southers, Republican.
So wrong.
Yeah. It's... Hey, there's a judgment day coming.
That's right,
coming down eventually.
Thank you for all you do to help expose.
Well, thank you, Leslie. God bless you.
God bless you.